Blog Talk Radio.
Live from the Bronx, New York, this is the Brovian Talks. For news, information, video, and stuff, follow us on Twitter at Brovian93, at Brovian93. That is BROVIAN93. BROVIAN93 on Twitter. So yesterday, we ended the show talking about the Devils. And I got to say, I wasn't entirely happy with my take on the Devils. Simply because we had a time and had to fit as much stuff in 5 minutes before the show ended. So I want to take a moment, or a good probably 10 minutes, to talk about the Devils, what I think is wrong with them, what I think they need to improve on, and what they should do going forward. Now, the Brovian is a part of many Devils groups on Facebook and online. And there is a at least online, because I don't know any Devils fans personally living in New York. There aren't that many of them. But online, I get the sense that there is a pretty sizable group of people out there who want to fire the coach, John Hines. And believe me, I can see why. The team is underperforming of fan expectations. It's been, what, 5 seasons or more now since they've missed the playoffs. And, you know, for many of our, especially my lifetime, but most of my life, the Devils have been automatic in the postseason. And these last 5 years, I'm not going to lie to you, these last 5 seasons have been tough. This is like a bizarre world that we're not used to seeing the Devils not make the playoffs for a large period of time. And this is only year 2 in the John Hines era, you want to call it. And I'm on the side that we shouldn't fire the coach, because for 2 reasons. Number one, this is year 2. Year 1, they were great last year. Better than many people expected them to. This year, the expectations rose a bit, but their performance is going backwards. And in year 2, what I call the sophomore year in coaching, and I've noticed this a lot, especially including my team, with the Jets, the Mets, and whatever have you, that the first season, the coach is there, the team does better than expected. The next season, they drop off or don't play as well. And it depends what happens in the next season and season after that to see what direction the team should go in. As I've noticed, especially among coaches here in New York, which is why I was always in favor of bringing Todd Bowles back to see what would happen in year 3. Possibly year 4. Same thing with John Hines. The potential, we know the potential's there. We have the goaltending. We have the defense. The offensive tools seem at least to be there on paper. You got Hall, Palmieri, Henrique, Camilleri. Miles Wood, if he, you know, in a couple of years' time. Not now, maybe, but a couple of years, he might be a hot offensive weapon. Who knows? And the second reason I wouldn't fire the coach is because the Devils traded away next to Andy Green, their best defensive player. Nobody was a bigger Adam Lawson fan than I was. He's great. Before Fitzpelli came over, Lawson was a very devil. and the defense hasn't really recovered from that trade. Now, I get it. Lawson for Hall. I understand the trade. Or Edmonton need a defense. The Devils need a squad. I get it. But I think Lawson was such a big part of defense. But I don't think anybody on the roster as of today is as good as he is and can replace him. But I get it. Andy Green isn't 100%. I understand all of that. But you can't blame the coach on trading one of your top defensive players and expect to see a defense perform as well as it did the year before. And let's be honest. Taylor Hall, great acquisition. He's going to the All-Star game. He's been great for us so far. But Palmieri has taken a step back. Camilleri is doing pretty good. Not great, but he's holding his own. Henrique, again, I'm still looking for the potential I see in him. I don't think he's reached his full potential yet. Maybe he has, and maybe it's a bit disappointing. It might be. But I think the coach deserves time. I think he deserves a chance. You know, you're only 2 years in, and you want to see the whole thing now. You can't do that with an organization. Especially when a team's in rebuilding mode. You need a calm, steady voice. I don't know what John Hines does behind closed doors during practice. But he checks, to me at least, to be the person who's calm, who's disciplined. If anybody's available now, I think he's the guy who could fix the team. I do. And let's be honest, the team has been playing so much better in this calendar year than they did in the last 2 months. I mean, when that the Devils in December, November, all they were doing was giving up 5 goals a game. So like every game they were losing 5-1 or 5-2 or 6-2. Now they're losing 2-1, 3-1, 3-0. I mean, the defense is okay. The goaltending, it's hurting a bit because the defense is, you know, a lot of too many shots on goal. The power, they're committing too many penalties. I mean, some of these penalties they're committing are just stupid. They're making good penalties. Just flashing, tripping. My God. And I get it. The refs haven't been as fair to the Devils as they should be. I mean, the Devils have gotten some pretty rotten calls, whether it's the hit on New Year's Eve against the Capitals, or Price going after one of the Devils players in Montreal. I get it. Or that goal against the Rangers, the first game they met the Garden. I get it. The calls haven't really been going the Devils' way, and they really haven't been catching many breaks. I was one of those people entering the year saying the Devils could be a playoff team. And if things go correctly, or ideally, perfectly, they could be a cup contender. And so far, 42 games into the season, none of those things are happening. The defense is weaker. They're not scoring any goals. And the power play is atrocious. I mean, how many shorthanded goals do you have to give in the season to realize something's wrong with power play? I mean, they don't even score in the power plays. Their power play's terrible. I mean, every game, 0-3, 0-4. On New Year's Eve, they were 0-9. Which I didn't think was possible. So I wouldn't fire John Hines yet. I give him one more year. And plus, you know what? Pittsburgh last year was struggling. They won the cup. The Ducks last year had a weak start. They came back, made the playoffs. Tampa got healthy. They were getting away from going back for the cup finals back the next year. So the season's not over yet. I know there's a huge consensus that, oh no, you know, let's just throw away the year and get a high draft pick. And you know what? If this team had no potential and were full of veterans or players that were, you know, not NHL material, I would agree with that. But I do see potential in this team. I mean, we have pieces in place right now that the team got hot and the team could actually score goals. I think the team could be a playoff team. I think they could reach the playoffs. They're only 8 points out of the last wild card spot. There's plenty of time for them to catch up. Look at Philadelphia last year. In mid-February, they were considered sellers, and they made the playoffs. So there's plenty of time for playoff hockey. They could run a good run. They could get hot and into playoffs. It's entirely possible. Can it happen? Of course it could. All they have to do is do two simple things. Number one, shoot the puck. Get in a dirty area of the ice. Get rebounds. Two, fix the power play. I mean, you can't win if you can't score on power plays. It just never works. You could do those two things and be more good on the offense and take more shots. They'll be fine. The defense has gotten better of late. The goaltending has gotten better of late. I still believe this team can make the postseason. I believe that. But do I believe John Hines is a good coach to make it happen? I don't know. I'm not a good coach evaluator. I do admit that. But I do see on that roster that the talent is there for our run at the postseason. Are they good enough to win the Cup? No. Forget about that. That's never going to happen this season. They have no chance of winning the Cup this year, but have a chance to be in the postseason. And even one around, depending on who they get. It's a long season. We have, what, 40 games left to go. We're only 8 points back. But you got to get it up and going. Now, tonight, or soon, Barack Obama will deliver his farewell address in Chicago. And, you know, these farewell addresses, you know, outside of Washington, Eisenhower, and if you're conservative, Reagan, you know, they don't really do much. People watch. Historians will document it. But, you know, let's face it, the last two or three farewell addresses, I can't remember what they talked about, to be honest with you. And I know Obama tonight will do anything possible to put a positive spin on his legacy, on his presidency, and he'll probably use the speech, I assume, by watching his actions for the past 8 years and the past 2 months, that he'll use this time to, of course, toot his own horn, as they all do, and also lay out a map for the left to rally around for the future, especially under the Trump administration for the next 4 or 8 years, who the hell knows. Now, I think he's going to try to be like a Reaganite speech, talking about, you know, the Obama revolution, liberalism, big government, all stuff that a pretty big part of the American public believes in. You know, he'll toot on the oil bailout, on Iraq, on Bin Laden, of course. I mean, he'll be an idiot to do that. He'll tout his record on gay marriage. And I think he'll, of course, take a couple of cheap shots at the former president, Bush. And he might take a shot or two at Trump. I'm not sure he might. But, of course, he'll ignore all his failures. He'll ignore the IRS. Philip Noah, the Mesotheria he caused. Philip Noah, the tense relationship with Russia. Philip Noah, the chaotic race relations we have thanks to him. Philip Noah, the 3 million people who deported. Philip Noah, TPP, which he didn't get done. He'll, of course, defend Obamacare, which is a hot issue right now. He'll defend that, as he should. That's his bill, probably his first major piece of legislation besides the bailout and the stimulus package. And listen, you know, I'm not going to go over the Obama presidency today or tonight. I'll go over it probably on the 18th, next Wednesday, when he's 2 days away from leaving office. And, you know, it really is hard to believe that that this president has been around for 8 years. I mean, my God. I remember I was in freshman year of high school. In the library at lunchtime, watching his inauguration. It's amazing how time flies. Now I'm here on his online radio show talking about him leaving office. I mean, it just amazes me how fast time flies. It really does. And how many things could happen in 8 years. It's unbelievable. I mean, if you grew up under Obama and Bush like I did, it's amazing how much the world has changed from when Bush took over to when Trump's taken over. Now, these two presidents who have been so polarizing, so divisive, have shaped the country and the world. And it's not really a good thing either. Because, you know, spoiler alert, I think both men did a pretty poor job. I mean, you know. That's it for today. That's it next week. And this speech is going to be a rallying cry for liberals everywhere to rally around. This is going to be played over and over again, probably, at every Democratic meeting, Democratic groups, college campuses, and for millennials. You know, I do think that under the Trump years, Obama might be or will be a vocal figure. I think he'll be what Bill was to Bush under his presidency. A vocal critic will be on TV, he'll write books. You know, he'll be that that figure for the left and Democrats to rally around as he's becoming more and more of late. So, you know, it's going to be a long speech. He'll think his wife, family, staff. He'll go, when we took office, this country was in pretty poor condition. And it was. I mean, let's face it, Bush left his country in a horrible place. And I feel bad for Obama because, let's face it, he didn't have a great country to inherit. He didn't inherit much. That was great. And Bush took a pretty strong country, demolished it. Obama comes in, tweaked a couple of things, but it's still in pretty poor shape. Now, he did do the oil bailout, which he's going to toot. He is going to do the thing with Tackett, he's going to toot. Obamacare will probably be the main thing of his speech. I'll be shocked if Obamacare isn't at least a quarter of his speech. Because that's the fight right now. This is legacy he has to defend. I'm sure that this speech will be a tool for Democrats in the Congress, in the Senate and House to use to fight with Republicans to try to repeal it. And listen, that's his right. You know, that's his practically signature legislation. That's the one that has his name on it in the eye of the public. And that's what Republicans were fighting over for the better part of 8 years, let's be honest. But, you know, all these things, these farewell addresses, all they do is tout the president's legacy. Will Obama issue an Eisenhower-like warning? I'm not sure if he will be like Eisenhower, you know, warning about the military-industrial complex. He'll probably warn against hate and racism and sexism, you know, like Meryl Streep did. I don't think he'll take that route. If he does, he'll be really subtle about it, like he's been doing for the past 8 years. You know, that's how he appeals to the whole country for the most part. That, you know, he doesn't quite say it. He, you know, hints at it. People can interpret either way. But, you know, I'm sure, you know, if you're on the right, they're going to hate it. If you're on the left, you might be in tears. And if you're a normal guy, you won't care. Because you're like, yeah, whatever, you know. Where's NCIS? Or where's, what's on today? Today's Tuesday. What's on Tuesday? Where's The Flash or something? On Channel 11. You know, I'm going to watch it. We tweeted about it at Brogan93, follow us on there. But right now, listen, I find it odd he's doing it in Chicago. I don't like it only because, you know, he's a president, do it in the White House. Chicago, you know, look at the city right now. It's not in good shape. I mean, I see on the news every day, you know, somebody gets shot. Like, what the hell's going on over there? Why is he in Chicago? Is his hometown? Blah, 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 blah. But, you know, I see a tradition. I'm not sure about any president before Eisenhower did it. I'm not sure if Truman did it in the White House. Coolidge did it. I'm not sure. But at least in television history, the president's done it in the White House. In different rooms, but it was in the White House nonetheless. Now, it's Obamacare thing. I mean, if you're Republicans, what in the hell are you thinking? You've had 6 years to come up with an alternative plan to Obamacare. Six. And the gall they must have, absolute gall, to want to repeal it with nothing to replace it. I mean, how stupid are these people? Are they stupid? Are they evil? I mean, come on. They've been studying how evil Obamacare was for 6 years. And now they're in power. Now they have all the cards in their hands. And if we'll appeal it, we've got nothing for you. We have no alternative for you. But why do you think Obama's so popular? Why do you think Obama got his way as president for the most part 8 years? At least publicity-wise. Because of stupid people like them. I mean, it's beyond me. Whoever the hell the PR or the GOP, they have to get fired. I mean, the Democrats are looking like the heroes here. Can you imagine repealing it and having all those people uninsured? My God. This could be the greatest thing that Democrats politically have right now, is Obamacare. Now, I applaud Rand Paul. I applaud Donald Trump, President Donald Trump, because at least they had the common sense to say, hey, the minute you repeal it, replace it with something. And Rand Paul, I mean, one of the smartest, most respected politicians in Washington, who has more integrity than probably half of people combined have, is only one speaking or saying to the script for the past 6 years of a balanced budget, of appealing to political Obamacare, of a gene change. I mean, the Republicans are reminding us once again why we voted for Obama, why we voted Democrat in 06 and 08 and 12. Those people realize that, hello, we elected you to give us a better alternative. That's just a cut it and run, and you don't even vote for a balanced budget. refused to support Rand Paul's plan? Rand Paul's the only one there, at least, with common sense on the Republican side. None of those people are good right now. The Republican Party has never had more power than they do right now in their entire history in probably 100 years, or close to 100 years, since the 20s, they've had this much power. This is their chance to really show the American public and this new generation of voters, which lean Democrats, to show them what Republican government could do. Don't blow about being stupid. Don't blow about showing how evil you really are. I get it. I understand. You had no idea Trump was going to win. You had no idea whether or not you'll hold the Senate still. I get it. We should at least have something ready. I mean, you're politicians. Some of you folks are lawyers. Okay, men. You always have something prepared just in case the unexpected happens. But they have nothing. And Democrats know they have nothing and use it to their advantage. It's unbelievable. It really is. I mean, how stupid are these people? Really? How can you look at American public in the eye and say we're leaving millions of you people uninsured? You can't just appeal it and wipe your hands and we're done, and then and wait a year or two later and go, oh, this is our plan. No. Next week or in a couple of days' time, when Rand Paul releases his plan with a alternative version of Obamacare, I'll go through the entire bill with my audience on that day. And that's the bill Republicans should use. It really is unbelievable. It makes me furious in a way because they've been doing the same nonsense for 6.5 years. It's not like they woke up and go, oh, well, we're in power now. God, what do we do? We've been fighting this thing for 6 years. And this is it. This is it. If they lose this fight, Obamacare is with us forever. It's never going to leave. If they win, to the public, and to the doubters, and to the haters, that they can govern effectively, that they are compassionate, and they do have plans to make this country better. This is their shot. Obama had his. The Democrats had theirs 8 years ago. They blew it. It's now your shot. Use it wisely. Because believe me, in 2 years' time or in 4 years' time, you may regret it. You may. When the public turns on you and hates you again, and the Republicans annoy you word once more, boy, you'll be looking at that and going, you know what? We missed our boat. You can't throw these people under the bus. You have to have something. And keep all the things people like. But Obamacare, a lot of things people like about Obamacare, keep those and make a plan around it. You're not stupid. You're a millionaire for a reason.